Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
I am so psyched about this next segment. I want you to imagine an animated series about a horse who battles depression, substance abuse, and the tantalizing, short-lived nature of fame and relevance in Hollywood. It's not exactly Bugs Bunny or Tom and Jerry.
Closure is a made-up thing by Steven Spielberg to sell movie tickets. It's like True Love and the Munich Olympics doesn't exist in the real world. The only thing to do now is just to keep living forward.
That is the very funny Will Arnett as the voice of BoJack Horseman, the main character on the critically acclaimed animated Netflix series that oscillates from deeply tragic to the wonderfully silly. And joining me here in the studio is the creator and executive producer of BoJack Horseman and author of a new collection of short stories titled Someone Who Will Love You in All Your Damaged Glory Stories, Raphael Bob Waxberg. Welcome to Boston Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Now, listeners, we're live on Facebook. Keep listening, but you can also watch us, too, at Radio Boston's Facebook page. All right, so first of all, let's start with the book. It is a collection of short stories, and it really taps into that same kind of dark humor that shines throughout BoJack Horseman. Can you talk a little bit about your kind of your artistic perspective and how you balance some of these really tragic notes with the comedic ones? Is that how you see and experience the world?
Yeah. I mean, I think life is funny and sad all at once, and I'm very suspicious when I see fiction that is not funny or sad, when it's just funny or just sad. And I think that perhaps some storytellers are afraid that too much comedy takes away from the tragedy, or if things get too heavy, it stops being funny. But I think some of the biggest laughs I've had in my life are in very sad situations.
Yeah.
So I like to mix it together, and I think you get kind of like a peanut butter meets chocolate kind of fun thing going when your stories are sad and funny.
You know, my mom has passed, but when I was a little girl, I remember very distinctively that when bad things would happen, the first thing she would do is call her best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason she would is her best friend would make her laugh.
Yeah.
And within a couple minutes, they'd be crying but laughing uproariously.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of feeling that you're getting at with your work?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know, you know, any other way to approach the world other than isn't this sad and isn't this funny?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's a strain of Jewish humor in that. You know, I think that's kind of my upbringing was you make jokes about the rough things, and that doesn't mean they're not rough. You know, it doesn't cheapen those things.
Right, right. All right, so the first story in the book is called Salted Circus Cashews Swear to God. And it's a snapshot of a first date. We're going to ask you to read a short excerpt, if that's all right. You've got it in front of you. But if you want to set that excerpt up at all, you're welcome to do so.
Sure. So the story is about a first date, and a girl goes back to a guy's apartment, and he offers her a can of salted circus cashews. And she doesn't know what a salted circus cashew is.
Nor do I.
But she looks at the can, and the rest of the story is kind of the message on the side of the can.
Okay.
And the message on the side of the can basically says, these are salted circus cashews. Don't worry. There's not a snake on a spring that's going to jump up and frighten you.
Right.
Okay? So that's the setup. Is she's reading the can, and the can is kind of delivering her this monologue. Okay. I see that you are still not opening the can. And I understand that. Maybe you are right to be cautious. You have been lied to before, after all. Your heart is weathered and scarred, mishandled by many, eroded by time. You're no dummy, and yet repeatedly you stumble over the cracks of your cobblestone heart. You let your naked foolish hopes get the better of you. Perhaps every can of cashews has a fake snake lurking, but you keep opening them, stupidly, because in your heart of hearts you still believe in cashews.
All the way through. It's not a chance. I only believe that there was a snake in that can. Is there a snake in that can, or are there cashews in that can?
I think that's open to interpretation.
No, you
You've just
to
told
me
a lot about how you view the world, right? I think there are people who, when they get into relationships, they, you know, jump in feet first and they open that can of cashews, no matter how many times snakes jump out at them. And then I think there are people who always, you know, no, okay, the snake hasn't jumped out at me yet, but it's coming.
It's coming.
Right?
Although I would still open the can just in case there was a cashew. Just in case
you want them, right?
Right. So you kind of have this absurd scene. It's pain and it's hopefulness. You seem to really be able to make the absurd relatable to people. Why are you so good at that?
I'm just very talented. I don't know. Why am I so? I mean, I think that's what I mean, because to me, I am more interested in the making it relatable part, right? Mm-hmm. And I the point of the story is not to have this silly thing happening that's absurd and crazy. The point is to get at something real and emotional and relatable. But I also get bored if a story is just real and emotional and relatable. So I like to kind of find these weird ways in where, you know, like in this example, I'm talking about a snake in a can, but I'm also talking about the fear and trepidation that comes at the beginning of any relationship.
Yeah.
But I'm also talking about a snake in a can with like a ridiculously long note on the side of it. And that's what kind of, I guess, keeps me interested in what I'm working on.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I'll get bored. So I like having two things going on at once.
Okay. So you talked about in this case, it's sort of the tension of the beginning of a relationship. Sorry. One of the stories I loved was called A Most Blessed and Auspicious Occasion, mm-hmm. which takes place later in a relationship
yes.
when a couple is getting ready to get married. And they come from some tradition that has a lot of very distinctive religious practices. So and everybody's giving them advice about
right.
what they should have in their wedding. So it all culminates in the two of them having this moment where they realize how much they love each other and want to be getting married.
Right.
But there's literally blood and flames and wailing choruses.
Yeah.
And it kind of is credible that you'd need to be in the middle of blood and flames and wailing choruses. So is it that the extremes are necessary for...
Yeah, well, that story really came from when I got married. And
was there blood, flames, or
no, not those specific traditions. But, you know, my wife and I really wanted to keep our wedding very small and very simple. And I think we were constantly surprised by both the societal expectations around us, but also our own expectations of what we'd always wanted our wedding to be.
Mm-hmm.
And on the face of it, all of these traditions are very silly. Like, why must you wear a white dress?
Yeah.
I don't know, but that's what it is. And you can't not wear a white dress. You know, or for us, you know, we wanted a chuppah. We wanted to step on a glass. Even though we are not particularly religious, you know, what does it all mean? I don't know, but we do it and we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to tell a story about that with these other arbitrary customs, including sacrificing goats and having a shrieking chorus who wails and flails around in the middle of your wedding.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I like about the gauntlet of a wedding is it does bond you together in a way.
Yeah.
And that if you can get through all the stuff it takes to get married, that's like a good first step to being married, I think.
So I just want you to know that you have now permanently ruined the aisle that a bride and a groom walk down
uh-huh.
for me, because I will only see it as a gauntlet now.
Right? That's what it is.
I want to say thank you for that, because
yes.
there goes the aisle for me. I'm going to a wedding this weekend. It will
Enjoy
only
it.
Look like a gauntlet to
right.
me.
They've made it this far.
That's right.
Congratulations.
Okay, so I'm going to get killed by the whole team if I don't ask you some BoJack Horseman
sure.
questions. First of all, were you surprised by the success of the show? It's a quirky show.
I mean, I'm always surprised by the success of anything, because I always feel like the work that I do, for me, it's very personal, and it feels very much, you know, I'm aiming right for my own pleasure zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to make stuff that I would like, and I'm beyond shocked when other people like it too.
Okay.
But it's a wonderful thing.
Now, so for folks who haven't seen it, some of our listeners may not, the show premiered in 2014, and it features characters that have human lives with, you know, arguably human bodies, but animal heads. Why did you decide, what was this hybrid animal head
well,
body
that
thing
that actually
about?
Came because I wanted to work with my friend Lisa Hanewalt, who's an incredibly talented artist, and she'd been kind of drawing these animal people just on her own for years. And so I was looking for a new project. I said, hey, can I do something with your animal people? And
mm-hmm.
she said, sure. And it's been a joy that now I've gotten to work with her for over 6 years now.
So
what a treat.
Do you think the friendship makes the work better?
I think so in some ways. I mean, I think we have a similar sensibility in a shorthand when we're talking about the characters. And I think we it makes it more fun to go into work every day to know that I have friends there.
Yeah. Okay. So
rather friends than enemies.
Right. Well, yeah. Good point. I want to let our listeners know, too. So this main character, BoJack Horseman, he's a former 90s sitcom star who is kind of struggling to remain relevant in his own mind as well as in the broader community. These cheesy sort of 90s sitcoms, they feel like they're from a really long time ago. Like, I'm a little older than you. For me, it was like the Welcome Back Cotters, right? So why did you want to tap into that in particular?
Well, I think that those are the kinds of shows that I grew up on myself. And what I really like about those shows is that they are cheesy. And they're, you know, you wouldn't see them on, like, the most influential or the best TV shows of all time lists. But for so many people, they meant something. They were influential. They were a part of their lives, right? Like, I didn't know these shows I was watching as a kid were bad, quote-unquote. You know, I think there's something wonderful about these shows that have heart and, you know, want to say that the world is good and that people love you. And I think now as an adult, I take a more cynical view and I go, I don't know about those shows. But I think you cannot escape the fact that they meant a lot to a lot of people and there's real power there. And so I think the... I was really fascinated by kind of the mix of shame and pride that BoJack might feel for being on one of those shows. That he would know they're not cool, but also they meant something.
Well, yeah, you know, it strikes me now that you're speaking, there have been several times watching episodes where it feels like he's actually seeking to recreate in his life moments that he found meaningful from this kind of
absurd. Well, that's the other
comedy.
Thing is that, you know, his own life has been very sad. But then there was these 9 years when he was on this show and he got to create this happy family. Yes. And that's the closest thing to a happy family that he's ever had.
Yeah. All right. Now, again, you are on Radio Boston. So we're going to do the Boston episode.
Oh, sure.
One of your characters, Diane, returns to her parents' home in Boston after her father dies. I'm going to listen to a clip from that.
Gary, Marty, Artie, Didi's back. Come here.
Game. Watching the game. Can't look up from the game. How you doing?
Marty, it's a game from 86. You've seen it 100 times.
And how many times does Buckner break your heart?
100 times.
Oh, thank God you're here, Didi. Pops is wicked departed.
Oh, yeah, man. He departed so hard, and I do not like them apples, Didi.
I have expected Matt Damon to just walk in the middle of the scene. Was there any Boston stereotype you did not use?
We tried to hit as many of them as possible.
Yeah, I mean, that was...
We didn't want it to feel like we were accidentally resorting to stereotypes, so we wanted to make it very clear that we were throwing everything but the kitchen sink in there.
All right, now, I'm glancing at my pages. There are so many things that I wanted to ask you about. We don't have a ton of time left. And one that I do want to get to, one of my colleagues pointed out to me today an episode that you did that takes place almost entirely underwater.
Yes.
And I watched it today, and it was so bold and creative and risky. I mean, most of this animated show has no dialogue other than the gurgling sounds.
Yeah.
So were you freer to take risks because it was an animated show? Did you feel like you were taking a risk when you do things like that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, especially early on in the run, and that was in season three, there is always trepidation around trying something new and crazy when you feel like you've figured it out. It's like, we got a show here. It's working. Like, you know, maybe don't try new things. But I get bored very easily, and I like to try new things.
Yeah.
And that was a fun bit of serendipity where, you know, we had this idea in the writer's room. Like, oh, wouldn't it be just like as a construct, wouldn't it be fun to do an episode that didn't have any dialogue in it? We couldn't figure out how to justify why you wouldn't have dialogue in an episode. You know, why aren't these characters talking to each other? And then on the other hand, Mike Hollingsworth is our supervising director of the show. And he was fascinated because we'd hinted at that there are other underwater cities, but we hadn't really seen them. And so he came to me and said, I really wanted you to do an underwater episode. I said, yeah, but if our characters go underwater, how are they going to talk to each other? And then in the middle of the night, I woke up and I said, Eureka, these questions answer each other. And then Jordan Young and Elijah Aaron wrote that episode and they did a brilliant job of it because we didn't know how do you write an episode without dialogue. And they just wrote a full script without any lines in it. And then I think the animators really got a chance to shine on that episode because it's all so visual and so beautiful.
And listeners, I have to tell you, it is such a compelling story.
Do you have a clip? Can we play an audio clip of the episode
glove
with
the glove gloves? Over in the control room, they're like, no. All right, we've got like 60 seconds.
Great.
So what are you going to tell people about what comes in season 6?
I cannot tell you anything that comes in season 6. But I will say, Boston, tonight I'm going to be at the Brattle Theater at 6 o'clock reading excerpts from my book. And I might tell you what's going to come in season 6 there.
Oh.
So you should come
repeat,
to that.
Repeat where you're going to be.
I'm going to be at the Brattle Theater. Harvard Bookstore is putting it on. And it's going to be there at 6 o'clock. And I'm reading an excerpt from my book. And I'm being interviewed by Johnny Sun. And we're going to talk about things. And I'm going to sign books, too. It's going to be a great time.
It sounds like it'll be a great time. And listeners, you can find out more info about that on our website, radioboston.org. That is Raphael Bob Waxberg. He is the creator and executive producer of the Netflix series BoJack Horseman and author of the short story collection Someone Who Will Love You in All Your Damaged Glory Stories. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much. What a treat.
I really appreciate having you.